Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 227 of Instructional Coaching with Miss B. We are talking about breaking through resistance with difficult conversations with my fantastic guest, Becca Silver. Becca has been a guest on this podcast before, and you loved her, so she's back to share more of her expertise about resistance and coaching with you and with me. This is a part of my series on better coaching conversations. We had a great episode about this last week, about how to record your coaching conversations and keep track of the kinds of conversations you're having. And then today we're digging into this topic of resistance and how sometimes we need to have these conversations even when we feel very reluctant to have them. If you are struggling with a resistant teacher, a teacher who is unaccepting of your charms, maybe unresponsive to your charms, you can get my Coaching Resistant Teachers free mini course if you just head to buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. That's resistance with a CE at the end. And that will give you the mini course and some 5 days plus one of steps that you can take to actually change that coaching relationship. So let's go ahead and welcome Becca to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Becca. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I always love talking to you, and I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks. Okay. So I know you've been on the podcast before, but as a quick way to introduce yourself, we would love to hear about a few things. Who do you help, and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
I help instructional coaches and school leaders and district leaders and even statewide leaders these days. So it's been like really exciting to work with all those folks.
Nice. Okay. And how do you spend your time and energy?
I spend my time and energy within schools. Mm-hmm. I do a bunch of stuff. I do professional development. I have my academy. So I love like doing these like PD modules and coaching in between and giving that like kind of infused support. And I go into classrooms and I observe teachers, and I love, one of my favorite things to do is modeling for coaches how to coach when I am coaching teachers.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. And then my second part of this is, what is a hobby you love? And that is because I am on a mission to share hobbies with coaches because we often don't make enough time for ourselves. So what is a hobby you love to do?
And I want to say this, you know, when I first read this and I was talking with you, I said, oh, isn't it great? I have a hobby, because I too struggled with finding a hobby. So this is a recent hobby. I'm learning to play guitar. And I have so I have a goal. So I'm very goal oriented, and I'm sure folks listening are also very goal oriented. So I'm like, not only am I going to learn guitar, I'm going to learn guitar well enough to perform at an open mic night.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, no, that's my goal. So there's like it's like training for a marathon. That's I have a future I'm living into.
Yeah.
So I'm practicing guitar, and I downloaded this app. Mm-hmm. Called Guitar Tuna, T-U-N-A. Mm-hmm. And it teaches me guitar and it plays the song along with me and it sings along with me too. So I feel like I sound much better than I probably do.
To the radio, and then you turn down the radio and you're like, wow.
Oh no, I sound terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool. I love that hobby. That's great. Good for you. Okay, so today we're talking about resistance, and we are talking about how we need to have like maybe challenging conversations to help coaches actually break through some of the resistance that they are seeing from teachers. So I want to get started with just like a basic understanding of, why do coaches experience resistance from teachers?
My answer is because teachers are human. Resistance is a human experience. We all experience resistance. And it's, you know, if we think about the context of school, right? We hire critical thinkers. We want our teachers coming into our schools critically thinking about how to differentiate for their students, what to do when a pivot needs to happen, when Joe is acting out again, how do I get him from throwing the chair, right? So we want our folks critically thinking, and the context of it's a default compliance culture. Essentially, how change typically happens in schools is someone makes a decision and then tells everyone else, hey, you have to make this change. And so when our beautiful critical thinkers are engaging with the change, right? Some of them are like, okay, that sounds great, and do it. And some folks are grappling with the change, right? And so one of the things I like to say is, what would we call it if all of our teachers, all at once, if we said there's a change happening and everyone said, yes, we'll do it, and they immediately applied it, what would that be called? And it would be compliance. Right. And what we don't want just blind compliance in our schools. We want engagement from our teachers, just like we want engagement in classrooms. And sometimes engagement looks like grappling with a change, and sometimes grappling with a change looks like resistance.
I mean, I can relate to that. I shared before in the podcast that as a teacher, I was not the first one to say, "Oh, I love them and drop everything and do this new thing." I absolutely did not. And I wasn't My intention was not to be resistant. I don't think that people most of the time, people are not going, "I'm going to be resistant about this. I am going to resist what they're bringing to me." It's more like, "I don't know about that. I don't know if that's going to work. Is that really better than what I'm doing now? Is that a good use of my time? Do I think that's actually going to meet my kids' needs?" And so we see all these, it can feel like whenever you're the coach, oh, they're just fighting everything. And, in reality, they are, I like the way you say it, they're thinking critically about, what it is that they're being asked to do, because they have to consider a lot of factors whenever they're going to implement something. And the ones I gave were just like the, tip of the iceberg things that teachers think whenever they see something new.
And if we're going to boil down resistance to two words, it would be unmet needs. And everyone experiences resistance. We resist people. We resist your mother-in-law. We resist going to the gym. We're like, I know I'm supposed to go to the gym, but I'm not going to the gym, right? We resist also eating healthy. So we resist all sorts of people and things in our lives. And it's not, it's, you know, we don't want to ask ourselves, am I resistant? Do I experience resistance? No, it's when do I experience resistance? We all experience it.
So, can you share a little bit about the change adoption curve to help us have sort of that visual in our minds as we have this conversation?
So I want everyone to kind of envision a bell curve, right? So we're starting, we have a tiny, piece at the beginning, and it goes up and it goes down, right? And so this change adoption curve describes how many people will adopt a change at one time. And so at the beginning of that curve, you see a small amount of people when a change comes down the pipeline. Everyone says, okay, we got to adopt this change. There's a tiny portion of people that will jump on board immediately and excitedly, and they're called the innovators. And typically, like and sometimes in change initiatives, you'll see a pilot group. That's the pilot group. Or it's just the excited people. They're like, I'm going to do it first. And they're eager and like, go for it, guys, right? And they do it. And then after they do it, you'll see a larger group afterwards be like, oh, that happened to Miss Smith's classroom. It seemed to work for her. She seems to be excited. Now I'll adopt it. And so you see a larger group after that adopt it, and they're called early adopters. And then we go to early majority, and we see a lot more. We start to see a lot more momentum of change. All right. And we have a late majority. And the change adoption curve people named the last piece of people. Laggards. I do not like that term. I don't like calling people laggards because I feel like it implies somehow like they were whatever,
Yeah,
like
sounds like
bad. And I
sluggish and like,
like, yeah. So I call them the latest adopters.
Yeah, lead it
Like,
up.
you're just the latest. And that's who we often call resistant, is our latest adopters. And they're hesitating for really a wide variety of reasons, right? We don't know. We can't say, oh, it's always this thing. We don't know. But what I can say, it's some unmet need. Often it's fear that is, they're grappling with in their mind. So they're waiting to see, how's it go with this other person? How'd it go with these other people?
Yeah, that old Simon Sinek video, That was my favorite part of that video that he did. I think it was the same one as the why, right? Isn't that the same one? Yeah. Well, the part I really liked about that video was the change adoption curve. And I loved it because the example he gave about the only reason these people don't have rotary phones still is because they can't get them. Like the only reason they just that's can't so buy them anymore. Yeah. And so that was kind of like, as far as technology goes, I will use technology. I have no problem with it, but I don't feel the need to update it all the time. And like I was mentioning before, my husband is a video, photo, you know, audio guy, which means that we always have stuff everywhere. And the only reason I got a smartphone is because whenever we were dating, he bought me one. And I was like, I don't want this. Then I'm reachable. A cell phone. It was a cell phone. I was like, I'll be reachable all the time. I will be like, I don't want people to, why can't I just come home and check my answering machine and see what happened when I was gone? I don't understand that. I didn't need it. And now I'm kind of like, I feel like I was right. I'm still like, I feel like I wish I didn't have this thing a little bit. But I can relate to those people in that way. And I feel like in our lives, many of us have an element in our lives where we are the latest adopters.
For sure.
You know, I didn't get cable. I had a TV with rabbit ears until he moved in. I was like, great. Yeah. I guess now I have to have a nice TV. I have my console TV from when I was like 7 years old. And I was fine with that. So we can all relate to that in some element of our life, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just that we see that's working against us is whenever it's teachers who are the latest adopters at our school, right? That's how we are frustrated by that, which is not unreasonable to be frustrated. But somebody else is frustrated with us. My husband was so frustrated with me with my TV.
I love it. And that's, I was a teacher that experienced resistance many times in my career and was brought into the principal's office. Like I would get in trouble. I was like, I'm not doing it. And I think that really that helps me have so much compassion for those experiencing resistance. And I want to say one thing about my language around resistance. I'm very specific that I say teachers experiencing resistance and not resistant teachers, because the moment that we label someone something, it keeps them stuck in that way, in the very thing we don't want them to be, which is resistant. So I say many, many extra syllables, to just really be crystal clear about what resistance is, which is an experience we move through and not a thing that I am.
Yeah, all the time, because these people may not be resistant about all things, right? It's just
certain. No one is. Yeah, no one is. Right. Yeah.
So, okay, what I remember as a teacher, my school was having some issues with like accountability and it was mostly because our principal didn't hold anybody accountable. And so that was my
pleasing principal. Yes.
A little bit, yeah. And so I remember him coming in at the beginning of the school year during in-service saying, you know, we're going to have those difficult conversations. We're going to start having difficult conversations. That's what he kept saying. I never actually heard of any difficult conversation. I heard one difficult conversation because somebody rolled her eyes during a staff meeting. And that was it. But other than that, I heard no difficult conversations coming out from the people that you might have heard them coming from. Yes. Oh, talk to me about this. He didn't do it. So those conversations, we tend to avoid these conversations, right? They make us uncomfortable. But what are some of the kinds of difficult conversations we avoid that if we would just have them, they could have real impact on the way our schools work?
And it's interesting we call them difficult conversations, because I've led many workshops on these and I've called them different things, like courageous conversations. Right. I'm kind of in the courageous conversations camp right now, but there's all the what's the other C one, something conversations, crucial conversations, right? Uh-huh. So they're, and difficult and hard and tough conversations, right? Yeah. My assertion, this is Becca's assertion and not the truth. My assertion is actually they don't have to be tough. They don't have to be hard. We're saying they're going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And so those conversations, I might have lost your question, but I think my point, I think, is that like, they're really about connection. Like my point of when I start those kinds of conversation where a big change needs to happen, or a change that hasn't been happening, we really need to be happening, right? My goal is to create connection first in that conversation. What was the question? I feel like I'm like kind of answering it, but I really want to answer the
No,
whole question.
you set the scene. Okay. Now the stage has been set. So what are some of those conversations? Like the conversations that if we would just have them, we could see real change, but we avoid them because we're afraid of them being uncomfortable.
Okay, great. So here's the great thing. If you shift from it being like, I'm going to make you do, I need you to teach science of reading, and you're still Lucy Calkins is
Yeah.
it, right? And it's like, I need to make you do it. Yes, it's going to feel awkward and hard and uncomfortable, right? The way I start those conversations is I actually look for mutual purpose. So I do the work beforehand to talk with them. I want to hear their complaints. So there's pre-work before these conversations. And I do my very best not to have tension be in our relationship before this conversation. So I'm checking in. Hey, how's it going? I'm reflectively listening. Oh my gosh, wow, it sounds like, you're having a hard time with behavior. Yeah, right.
Right.
So I'm checking in and I'm listening to their complaints because in their complaints is gold. Within their complaints is what's important to them. And that helps me have this kind of conversation because when I go into it, I can say, hey, what I'm committed to in this conversation is XYZ. And I know that what's important to you is XYZ, right? And so I can language it in a way that both shares and does not dilute what's actually important here and so that they can hear it.
Yeah,
That's what I
I
want.
think that one of the things that we do is we have all this anxiety or tension about talking to somebody about a certain thing or a certain person that we've, maybe had some friction with, and we bring it with us, and we assume they also bring it with us, with them, so
With
that
them. Yeah, exactly.
we kind of make assumptions about how everybody's feeling and about what everybody's intentions are. And I think that that's it's a mistake. I mean, we do it in all relationships. Humans, this is something humans often do. Like we think, oh, well, if I'm feeling this way, they're probably feeling this way. But it just makes everything so much harder because you're coming into it with so much emotion and you're assuming they have the same, that you're kind of like in a defensive pose. And then every now and then you might like attack with a jab, like you need to do this, you need to do
Yeah.
that. And that shouldn't be the nature of those conversations, but that's kind of how we approach them when we're bringing all of these feelings.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I mean, I still catch myself kind of becoming, I don't know if contentious is the right word, but I'll get into like this mode. And the thing that get the one of my biggest th barriers to creating connection and mutual purpose with another teacher is my shoulds. When I think they should do or be a certain way or shouldn't do or be a certain way. And I do, and I mean, I catch myself with my coaches that I work with, and I'm like, who, I was making up the story I was telling myself was that he's being difficult, when in fact, it felt vulnerable for him to ask open-ended questions instead of giving advice. And
They're
so,
unsure about what that's going to be like, so they're kind of afraid of it.
So it really goes into, so then I can start going into diagnosing what's actually happening here, right? What I'm always asking, because when I'm in schools, I'm like, give me your teachers experiencing resistance. Like resistance is my jam. Let me model with the coaches, like who is resisting? Bring them to me. I love those, right? I don't shy away at all because I know all I need to do is figure out what their unmet needs are. And I do that by asking questions and listening and making sure that they're heard. And I'm listening for what's important to them. What are they afraid of? What's frustrating for them?
So can you talk a little bit more about those unmet needs and what that looks like?
Yeah, for sure. So something that I've diagnosed, not diagnosed, sorry, that I've discovered is these five mindsets that we can listen for to see what needs support. And then underneath those are kind of unmet needs, right? But there's only five, right? So for folks to make progress, to get unstuck from making progress, and to like feel empowered around it, not I'm just like making, I'm not strong arming you into do it, is these five mindsets. One of them is a growth mindset. So it's a belief that I can improve. Then there's a success mindset. I believe I can succeed. There's belonging mindset. I believe I belong here. Value mindset. I believe this has value for me. This is one of the biggest missing ones. And ownership mindset. I believe that by taking responsibility, I can change things.
Interesting. So then you're identifying in each person, like, is there like a scale on the mindset, like a spectrum kind of, or like, what is it
Oh
that
yeah,
you're?
there's kind of like they have opposite mindsets. So there's a called a catalyst
Okay.
mindsets. And so there's, growth mindset has fixed mindset is the
Right.
kind of I call it the opposite mindset. And it is a continuum. All these aren't continuums, by the way. And it's so funny, like, in growth mindset, we're like, you either have a growth or a fixed.
Which is a
Nope.
fixed
It
mindset
is.
to have about.
It, which is a fixed mindset inherently. Exactly. It's all on wild continuums. And most people really live somewhere in a mixed mindset of all of these, right? And so yeah, they're all like belonging mindset and disconnected mindset. There's ownership mindset and victim mindset. So that yeah, they all kind of have these opposite mindsets, and there's elements to each one of them. I could go very deep because this is what I'm writing my book about. But one of my favorite kind of elements of kind of when you look at like, oh man, they're missing or they need support in an ownership mindset. Like maybe they feel like a victim about what's going on here, right? Like taking responsibility to really support them. There are three elements to ownership mindset. There's agency. I can take the reins. I believe I can take action here. There's optimism. I believe it's possible. And there's accountability. I can own the outcome. Like I can own the outcome.
Interesting. So the one you mentioned that is like lacking the most is the value mindset. Is that right? That something has value?
That's my opinion, not like a the research says, but
Your
yeah, in my
observation.
experience, maybe I should say that. And I'm actually curious, from you, when you listen to these mindsets, in my experience, the most prominent unsupported mindset, I'm trying very hard not to say missing mindset. It's easy, but I'm like, we're not missing a mindset, it's just unsupported. But the most prominent unsupported mindset is value mindset, because often this is like just one of those missed opportunities when change happens. I do think, leaders and coaches try to take the time to be like, hey, this change is happening and this is why. But the missed opportunity is to make sure that those external goals and reasons align with the teacher's internal goals and
Right,
priorities.
right.
And allowing that teacher to make that connection. We don't take the time to do that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it makes sense. And I think what's challenging is that whenever you're presenting something to a whole school, that's going to be a lot of different internal values that you are going, that you're not going to get to everybody in that whole group PD during in service. Like everybody's not going to find the value at that time.
But I also wonder, like, but could it be, or and, could it be a reflection question? We have teachers answer privately, jotting notes, turn and talk, reflect with your neighbor. What about this change could help you in your classroom?
Yeah,
How
absolutely.
do you see this helping? Blah, 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 right? So, like, could we whole group kind of tier one support, right? With our teachers. How do we tier one support? How do we have them all reflect? And then how do we tier three, one-on-one support teachers? But what, because some of them are going to adopt the change and we'll be like, off you go. On my levels of willingness, I call those the eager and the willing. Our willing teachers are like, we follow directions. We just want to know the expectations.
Oh my gosh,
Just
I
tell
know
us what
people
to
like this.
do. Yeah. And the eager teachers are like, bah, we just did it. We're not sure, but it's going to be great. Right. And then there's the hesitant and the stop teachers that are like, ooh, we don't know. And that's where the coach comes in and asks again, one-on-one, hey, how, like, what in, what do you value? Could you value about this change? What is important to you? How could this change help that?
Yeah, I like that. I love that. I remember I started, there was a grade level in our school that I feel like were the willing grade level. They were very much, and I
Quiet.
remember as a teacher, oh my gosh, yes, and didn't necessarily understand why they were doing what they were doing, but they did it. And I remember we got a teacher from that grade level 1 year into our grade level, and we were like, we were hesitant. We would embrace things, but we were like, I don't know. We have to think about like why this is, this is
Yeah.
work. And I remember this teacher was like, well, what we do is whenever we plan together is we all take out our notebooks and somebody says, okay, on Monday, this is what we're all going to do in reading. And we all write down Monday reading. And then they write down everything they're going to do on Monday reading. And then they go, okay, on Tuesday, this is what you're going to do on reading. And then everybody writes down what they did on Tuesday on re in reading. And we were like, okay, we don't do that. So sorry, you're going to have to, I don't know. That's not going to fly around. It was really strange, but that grade level was very compliant or very willing and very compliant. So that's so interesting.
It's different levels of willingness. And anyway, there's research around like different stages of concern when change happens. People actually go through these different stages of what they're concerned about. And it kind of, that's where my levels of willingness came from. But it's like, and even thinking about stages of concern, like people are concerned about different things and when the change happens, right? Even if that helps shift a mindset, like, oh, what are they concerned about? Listen for that even, right? So listening, oh gosh, I can, ooh, I'm going to take us down a scenic route just for a second, if
Go
that's
ahead.
okay.
Yes, let's go.
Okay. Listening is, and I know I've said this a bunch, but like listening can be so powerful in terms of, is actually, this is my assertion, listening is the most powerful thing you can do to start breaking through resistance, because you are information gathering. And the only way you can information gather is not only to listen, but listen well. And when you listen well, you're intentionally listening for something. So you're like, okay, well, I'm listening for what's important to them. I'm listening for what they're concerned about, right? I'm listening, people generally say, to understand, right? And I'm like, we can have more distinction around that. But like, what are you listening for that would help you address their unmet needs?
I like that. Thank you. Okay, so I would love to hear some examples of conversations that people may view as challenging, but that have resulted in change. So can you share a little bit about that with us, like some of your experiences?
Oh, for sure, for sure. So like yes. Okay. So a situation. There's a teacher that, do you want me to be generic, or do you want me to like give me a very specific example of
I'd
something
say
that,
give a specific as an
okay.
example if you feel comfortable with.
Good, good, good. I had a teacher that was struggling with behavior management. Shocker. And this was at a high school, and he was having a hard time. I was working with the coach, and so me coaching him was really me modeling for her. And so she was doing her very, she was like a super talented coach, is a super talented coach. And so she was doing her very best to impact this guy, and he would explode on her sometimes. Like there was some yelling, there was, he would be defensive. Sometimes he would like be okay with implementing something, but wouldn't implement it well. And my first meeting with him, the interesting thing about being a consultant, when I come in, I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. I'm going to coach you, right? Versus the
So
benefit of
different.
being, I'm like,
Different
I got to
dynamic.
build trust in 5 minutes,
For
right?
sure.
Versus all the months. And
But you also
so
don't have the same baggage.
that's
So it's
true,
like, and
right?
they know you're there from the outside, so it's like a different kind of relationship. Like the teachers I've worked with generally are a little more responsive just because they kind of feel like they have to be because they know you're being paid to be there. That's what,
Yes,
you know
exactly.
what I mean? It's really different.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Actually, once in a while I have a teacher that it'll be on the
Backfire.
opposite. They'll be
You're
like,
like, you're not even here. You don't even have a classroom. Like you're not even. What do you know? You're not.
exactly. Like, I like my
You don't
coach, I
even
don't like
go
you.
here.
Yes. So true. It's so true. So I sit down with this guy, and I'm like, I mean, I kind of heard about all the things. I'm like, what is happening? And so I'm asking him questions. What is he frustrated? He's frustrated with the behavior. Okay, great. At least you're
That's
seeing the same
aware.
things I am. Great. Okay. Why do you think that's happening? And so I give him coaching. We ask him questions. Oh, what, I'm wondering what could happen here. And he like comes up with some solutions. we go into his classroom the next week, and it was the same. He was like trying, and he was trying to implement. He wasn't just not implementing, but it was not going well. And I had a moment where I was like, this guy does not really know me, and I am not sure how this is going to go. But I thought to myself, he has been, what's been happening is he's been observed and then gotten feedback and then, coaching on what to do next. And then he goes and tries to do and then gets, it's the typical like observation feedback. And I'm like, that has not been working. And so I've got to do something different. I've got to interrupt this. And so Bill, standing on whatever meager trust I had with him, he had a moment where he was standing in the back where I was, and I said, "Hey, can I give you a suggestion?" And I gave him that in the moment coaching. And that was a risk for me, but it was one of those. So, and he did it. I gave him the suggestion. He went and did it. He saw results. He was like, "Oh, this is great." He emailed me and his coach the next day and said, like, "I kept doing the thing, and this is the best day I've had at this school this year." And so, one of the things to think about, so one of the mindsets that he needed support in was success mindset, self-efficacy. And so knowing that, one of the things I was able to do with him was give him, there's kind of key sources to building efficacy. Our friend Albert Bandura, who I've come to know very well from his research, he says, look, there's actual intentional ways we could build efficacy, right? And one of them is having success experiences. And so we can have people have success experiences by talking it out and having them do it. And this guy, I was like, look, just do it now, right? And then reflecting afterwards. And that totally changed his perspective on like his classroom and teaching and what was possible. So I mean, just to wrap this around with resistance, right? We got to break through his resistance by supporting what he needed. I didn't need to have a difficult conversation. I needed to figure out what he needed support in.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that I've seen happen so many times too, is we can give feedback and maybe provide some direction and support, but if it's not embedded in the moment, sometimes teachers do not make the connection and they can't picture it. They just can't see it. And they don't know, well, when am I supposed to even do that? Or how do I make it effective? Because maybe we'll say, okay, make sure everybody hears the directions before you move on to the next step. And they're like, but what does that even look? Okay, did everybody hear it? Yeah, okay, good. They don't know. They cannot picture it. They do not know. So being really specific in that moment and saying, okay, so what if you did this? Can you try this? And then he saw an immediate, a quick win in that moment. He was like, oh, things can work. Things do work, but it's not just the kids. I could change something that could make an impact here.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things as us coaches, we talk about building trust and the trust definition and kind of thought process around trust that I use is from The Speed of Trust. And Stephen M. R. Covey from that book, he says trust is the confidence we have in someone's character and competence. And when I talk with coaches and I run workshops on trust, we talk about characters, integrity, and intent. Do they know you have good intentions? Do they know you walk your talk? And then there's competence, right? And that is made up of capabilities and results. And the results that to trust you, people have to know you can produce results. But what coaches don't, this is a big mistake coaches make. They think the results teachers want to know is how good of a teacher they were in their classrooms. I often hear coaches go, when I was in the classroom, I did, and you see the teachers check out. They're like, and I'm done with this conversation. Like, thanks for tooting your horn, right? It doesn't build trust. What does build trust is when coaches can prove to teachers that they can help them produce results in the classroom. That's the results. I can help you produce results, not the results I produced in the classroom. And so what happened in that moment with this teacher and me is I built trust. So I was standing on whatever meager trust I had with him. Like, hey, do you trust me? Will you try this thing? And then when we produced results, our trust skyrocketed. So we were partners in this. And just like trust is in all of this, like resist in all the mindsets, trust is I've been calling it a reciprocal relationship. I'm not entirely sure if that's the right word, but it's like he needed to trust me to have a success experience,
Right.
right? Build his success mindset. And when that happened, he trusted me more.
Yeah,
So
it
it kind
like
of
builds itself. Yeah.
it builds itself,
Yeah, that makes sense. That's something I've talked about as well. Donald Miller talks about how trust is empathy and credibility. Like people need to know that you believe that you can like you actually care about them and like you can actually you want them to be successful and that you can help them be successful. Not just that, that oh, some people have lots of empathy but they don't have the skill set. And then some people have a great skill set but people don't feel really believe that they care about them. So they're not interested in it, And the credibility, one of the things I tell people to do is quick wins. Give them something that shows that shows that you are credible, that because it affects them positively, they have a positive outcome, and that they will come back to you and say, "Oh, that actually worked. That thing actually helped because now I know you know something, because it helped
That's
me."
exactly it. It's one of the things I say is without trust, coaching is just noise.
It's just more stuff that people are going to ignore. Yep, they have a lot of input they're ignoring, and that's just one more thing. You want to share one more example before we go of some kind of interaction that has created change?
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh, let's see. Okay, hold on. I've like five of them that just flooded my brain. I was coaching a coach a while ago. So this is a coach experiencing resistance. So this is, oh, this is great. Okay. This is the thing I want to say. And this is actually, I'm so glad I chose this example because what we don't realize is we have little mirror neurons in our brains, right? And the same thing that makes me yawn when you yawn, makes me resist when you resist. It's the same thing. And our human brains do that. Okay. So often when resistance is experienced on the other end, our brains do the thing where we start to resist too, and we put up our barriers and our guards. Okay. So often when coaches are experiencing resistance, the first thing I actually do is help them work on their own resistance first, because our resistance triggers their resistance. It's this resistance cycle that we get
It's the
into.
same like we talked about earlier, bringing those feelings to the meeting, bringing all that with you, then you're more likely to get that in response.
So I was working with a coach, and she was telling she was running weekly PLC meetings, and teachers weren't showing up. And they were like, sometimes, and sometimes they didn't. And she was so frustrated. She's like, these teachers don't care. And so I actually did some work with her around it, and we because her behaviors were, she was like sending emails and calendar invites and being very like electronically insistent. And I think, and her other behaviors were like, she was checking in with the teachers that actually responded to her. And she had the mindset that is inaccurate, but she had the mindset that we can only coach the people that want coaching.
Well, then what's the
No.
point? Because a lot of times those people are going to be pretty independent learners anyway. Like you are not making or breaking their career, but you're going to make or break somebody else,
And all teachers can be coached. All
Absolutely.
teachers, it's not a growth issue. All teachers want to grow. It's a discomfort issue.
For sure.
They just don't want to be uncomfortable. So, right. So there she is, and she's going around interacting with some teachers and emailing everyone, and she was mad. And so I was coaching her. I was like, okay, I got it. And so we actually had to do some work for herself to understand, like, what's the story I'm telling myself here, right? And so what she realized is she had made up in her head, her interpretation was her teachers were lazy. And this is a pretty common in interpretation people have when we get down to it. And everyone listening, I want to say this to you. If you don't think that we all have ugly interpretations that we have about other people, we just have to be willing to get over that it's ugly to be like, ooh, I actually feel that way. And so, right? So she was like, it's like I have this interpretation that they're lazy. And so once she realized that, she saw her resistance to them was keeping them keeping her from listening to them and figuring out what they needed. And so she actually became like this master in like listening. So she stopped talking to the select few that wanted coaching and started talking to everyone because she was like, I gotta figure out what's going on here. And she like had compassion. She's like, oh, they're not lazy. She's like, they just had big concerns that it wasn't being met. And I started meeting them. She now like trains other people. She's like, listen, the new coaches, she's like, you have to listen. So that's the so that's, that's my other story about resistance, like in the coach realm, right? Like we have a responsibility to not to bring our own resistance to the conversations.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing about that. So thank you so much for everything you shared today about resistance and conversations and how we can make change happen. How can people keep learning from you, if they want to follow up?
There's a few ways. One is I have my own podcast that I am excited to have you on sooner than later. So my podcast is called Coaching the Whole Educator. I have my website, thewholeeducator.com. That's my company, The Whole Educator. You can find me on LinkedIn at Becca Silver. You can find me on Instagram at The Whole Educator. And from there, feel free to reach out if you would like any kind of support. One of the big things you'll find on my website is a lot of information and free downloads around the catalyst mindsets, including a new interactive quiz. So like which mindset does your team need most support in?
Oh, I like
So
that.
yeah, feel free to reach out or check out the stuff.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Becca is always so full of such great information about resistance and working with teachers who are experiencing resistance and, making change happen. I love the research-based approach that she has. So definitely check her out if you're interested. And remember, you can get my free mini course, Coaching Resistant Teachers, at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. Next week, we are continuing our coaching conversations, Better Coaching Conversations mini series with Dr. Jo Lane. We're talking about how to talk so teachers hear you. We're looking at providing better feedback because sometimes our feedback is kind of missing the mark, and that's why we're having so much trouble getting teachers to actually respond to it because we're kind of not telling them what they need to hear. So definitely join me for that episode. Until then, happy coding. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!